Hey friends, welcome back to Metacosmios, a podcast with astrological forecasts for past and other cosmic chit-chat. I'm your host, Jay, translator of planetary cadence, also known as an astrologer. Thanks so much for being here. I've got another fabulous conversation to share with you this week. This time I'm joined by Jana of Feeling Loudly. Jana is a fellow astrologer and also a tarot reader, an Akashic Records reader, a poet, a diviner of all kinds, and an all-around rad and inspiring human. Jana is also a somatic parts work practitioner, and as they say on their website, quote, much of their work centers on reconnection, bringing people into compassionate relationship with the parts of themselves they've forgotten or denied. They see this work as a personal pathway to pleasure and fulfillment and a stepping stone to collective liberation and healing, end quote. Sounds pretty fucking magical, doesn't it? And I can tell you firsthand, it absolutely is. And Jana is. On this episode, Jana explores parts work with me and shares their knowledge and experience in the practice of internal family systems and how it weaves so beautifully and magically with astrology. We not only talk about the theory of it all, but we put it into practice as we take a look at some of the placements in both of our charts to show just how intuitive and nuanced these languages can be when combined. If you're already loving the sound of all of this, just stop the episode, go check out Jana's offerings or their podcast or their socials. You'll thank me later. You can come back to this episode later. Just go tune into what Jana's got going on and then you can come back here and I will wait. All right. And now, without further ado, let's welcome Jana to the show. Hey, Jana, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited that you're here.
Me too. I've been very excited about this.
Yeah, you suggested such a great topic. I would never, ever have thought about it. So I'm really excited to dive in. But before we get into that, why don't you introduce yourself? Like, who are you these days? What kind of work are you doing? What are you feeling passionate about?
Yeah. So I am an astrologer. I practice humanistic and evolutionary astrology and kind of like dabble in both waters. I do tarot. I work with the Akashic Records. So I do a lot of divination. And I'm also a writer. I do a lot of freelance writing. And then I'm also a poet. And so I kind of like swim between those mediums a lot. And I also operate a freelance writing and editing and marketing business. And so I kind of like straddle between more, like still have one leg that's kind of in more of like a corporate world, although it's mostly startups. And then the other leg and like 75% of my body is over in astro divination land. And what I'm feeling passionate about, I'm in the process of leading this group experience going through the major arcana day by day in my Discord and kind of leading this 22-day journey through the majors. And it's really fun. We're on day 6, I think, already, which is kind of wild. And I just love group experiences and journey work and getting to kind of do these experiential astro and divination things. So it's feeling cool.
It is so cool. And I've been checking out your podcast episodes, like going through the days. Those have been great. I've only made it to, I think, a high priestess, but I've been enjoying them so much. So
cool.
Check that out. I'll definitely link it in the show notes.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Yeah, those were spontaneous. So I'm glad they're they're resonating.
No, they're landing. Really, and I love the kind of organicness of that exploration of you just like kind of picking it up and going with it for the podcast, because it feels Yeah, it feels like I'm along for the journey in a really fun way. I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. I love it. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly the vibe I was going for, because I explicitly did not plan it at all. I decided like 5 minutes before I recorded the first episode that I was going to do it. So
I think it's also especially inspiring for me because I'm the type of person that plans so far in advance. And mm-hmm. that's just like where I find my comfort zone. But when you were like, I don't know, I guess I'm just going to do this. I'm like, hopefully I can make it. So I was like, awesome. Like, I want to be more spontaneous like that. So
yeah. I mean, I can relate actually though, because I sometimes do that in response to the part of me that really wants to super plan and that wants to have like a clear trajectory. And then another part of me that's like, no, we're not going to do that.
Just
we're
just going to do it.
Yeah. Just going to fucking do it. We're going to blow it up. Amazing. Yeah. So.
You mentioned that you do humanistic and evolutionary astrology. Is there like a couple sentence like summary that you could give for each of those types?
Yeah, totally. So humanistic astrology is really similar to like psychological astrology in that it's typically a form of natal astrology that's really focused on like weaving together astrological language and psychological language. And it's often looking at like human development and personal growth and the way that we kind of cope and learn and move through the world. Probably the most popular astrologer who practices humanistic that folks would be familiar with is Jess Glignotto. And so huge influence for me. And then evolutionary astrology is also has a very strong sort of psychological bent to it, although it's a bit more woo and out there, and that it often considers past life stories and kind of looks at soul growth through the lens of the chart. And typically, evolutionary astrologers will focus really deeply on the lunar nodes and Pluto, as well as the other outer planets, to kind of look at karmic signatures and skip steps and soul's growth and all that stuff. So it's cool. I dig it.
I love this because it's completely opposite from the astrology that I'm practicing. So it's cool to have the different perspective come on the show. I like that.
Yeah. I love talking to people from different branches and backgrounds because there's always like the center of our Venn diagram, but then there's so much to learn on the outside too.
So much, which I don't think I realized for a long time. I was kind of in a bit of a bubble. Like I was exposed to the astrology podcast and then all of the people that are on that show who are typically practicing some form of like Hellenistic or quote unquote traditional. And so then I was like, oh my God, all these people are doing all these cool things. There's so much more out there. But
yeah.
How did you find your way to all of this? Like astrology, tarot, magic?
Yeah. So very much was like a nodal opposition and Saturn return experience for me. I started exploring when I was probably 27. And I was familiar. It's not like I was walled off. And I always considered myself a very spiritual person to a degree. But I was raised with religion and then broke free from that and then found my way back during my Saturn return, which was a ninth house. I'm a ninth house cap Saturn. So it was like very on point.
Yeah.
Very on brand. I was going through like a whole life crisis, just like an existential life explosion. And my therapist actually asked me, I remember around 27 or 28, like how old I was turning, because I shared it was my birthday. And he was like, ah, Saturn return.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, he was very cool. He was a rad human. And I was like, what is that? And so then I remember going on a deep dive that night and being like, holy shit, like this is what's about to happen. And this is what I'm feeling. And then I happened to be living with a very witchy roommate who was into astrology and tarot, and I was sharing relationship problems. And she just like broke out her big astrology book and started reading to me about my Venus in Pisces and my Leo moon. And I was like, I just thought I was a Taurus.
Right.
It just kind of exploded my brain in the best way. And then I started like pulling up all of my friends' charts on cafe astrology and like doing all that. Got a tarot deck, got a tarot reading. And yeah, it kind of just unfolded from there. And throughout the rest of that Saturn return experience, it was a big lifeline for me. So I was just going through a lot of breakdown and trying to kind of like figure out who I was through all of that.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sure there's other people that have found it this way, but I think that's the first story I've heard about it being the Saturn return.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. I know a few people, and I think it might be just that resonance, like we've kind of bumped into each other.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What was your first tarot deck?
What was my first deck? It was a traditional Smith Rider Waite. It was just like the old school classic imagery. And then I got the Toth Tarot shortly after that, which kind of rocked my psyche. I didn't do it the traditional way where I like started with Smith Rider Waite and just like learned on it. I was jumping between that and Toth and a Marseille deck and just like
all the like pillars of the old school astrology. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was cool. And I didn't even know what I was doing at that point. Right. I was like, oh, it's different in this one. Okay.
Yeah.
What was your first deck? Do you remember?
It was like a knockoff of the Smith Rider Waite. Yeah. It was like somebody gifted it to me and I think they were trying their best, but it was very much like a bookstore like package with, I don't know. I mean, it's still kind of cute. And actually the Lover's card has three figures in it. So it's still one of my favorite depictions of the Lovers.
Yeah.
But kind of the rest of it is like, I don't really vibe with this. But
yeah.
Almost immediately after that, I picked up The Wild Unknown.
Oh, I love that deck.
Yeah. I mean, it remains one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finding a deck that you really vibe with just completely changes the practice.
Totally. Yeah.
Like I felt so stale. I got like a sterile feeling from the original imagery and it just never landed for me.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember which deck it was that kind of blew it all open for me, but yeah, it's magical.
I still love the Smith Waite, especially the Centennial, like the color on it I think is really nice and like calming. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I go to that when I don't want to be flowery. I don't want to like go into meditation dream. I want like fucking facts. Like, I feel like that is the deck that like does not pull any punches with me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For the most part, I'm like, I want some like cute animals and like.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We all need the friend who tells it like it is.
That's who it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. It's important.
Amazing. All right. Well, we are here to talk about IFS and parts work, internal family systems. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think before we dive into like how it all fits into your practice, can you just kind of explain what all of that is?
Yeah. Yeah. So internal family systems, IFS, is an integrative therapeutic modality that kind of looks at the whole of a person and considers what it refers to as sub-personalities or parts. And so a lot of people have probably dabbled in it. Like you said that you kind of were already familiar with it to a degree and you didn't realize it.
Yeah, well, when you suggested it, I was like, cool, I don't know what the fuck this is. I'm going to look it up. And then I was like, oh, that's what I do in therapy.
Yeah. So a lot of people, because there are a lot of therapists who are trained in IFS and who will weave it in kind of intuitively. But it originates, you know, it was pulled from older forms of parts work that were more like Jungian and Freudian, you considered these different sort of facets of the personality. Yeah. And so there's a whole umbrella term called parts work, and IFS is like one branch of that.
Okay.
in a more like modernized version that was really coined in the 80s by Dr. Richard Schwartz, who's a family therapist. And what he was observing in client sessions, both individual, well, it began in sort of like family group sessions where he would notice different people in the family relating to each other in different ways and aligning with each other, and how those alliances or like tension points could brew a lot of conflict and a lot of breakdown in communication and connection. And he started fusing his individual client work with what he was seeing in sessions, because he observed that individual people had sort of like similar dynamics going on within them. And right. that there were these different parts within them that often seemed like they were in conflict or aligning with each other, or just kind of wreaking havoc and creating self-sabotage. And so he started applying that thought to his work with individuals and started engaging them in conversations with different parts of themselves. And so today, what that looks like in practice is probably what you've experienced, where you'll hone in on like, there's a part of me that's feeling this way, or a part of me that has this thought or this fear or this belief. And then there's an opportunity to connect with that part and to often unburden it of some of the difficult emotions and like the baggage and weight and expectations that have been placed on it.
Yeah.
And so even like inner child work is kind of a form of parts work or IFS.
Right.
And we have different parts within us, like exiles, which would be more of like an inner child, usually a very vulnerable part that's sort of been like locked away very tightly in a place so that it can't be accessed in order to protect it. And mm-hmm. so those can look like our really, really vulnerable parts. We have managers that step in and often present in a certain kind of way to keep us from experiencing difficult emotions like humiliation and shame. And so for a lot of people, that looks like being like over-functioning or really passive or really assertive or like all over the board. And these kind of become things that we associate with our personality, but they can also be these like managerial parts that are trying to keep us safe, essentially.
Right.
And then there's also firefighters. And so that's kind of the big third piece, is these parts of ourselves that can, especially when we're really triggered or in danger or fearful, can kind of go to like our wildest coping mechanisms that can be harmful to us. And so often when we're looking at like addiction and escapism or like self-harm, that's stuff that kind of involves more of those firefighter parts within us that are like really, really trying their hardest to cope with horrifying circumstances. So gotcha. That's the spark notes.
The manager part is very familiar.
yeah, for sure. Yeah. And like we all have them. All humans do. And basically the crux of it is that it's a practice that really helps us show compassion to these parts and to integrate them. And then in integrating them, end up identifying more of like what we call our self energy, the part of us that feels really true and authentic, that can express itself more freely and kind of live up like to its core energy.
The center part of the diagram, right? Like the core self or like the authentic self. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
How did you come to all of this? Like what was the path that led you to this study?
I first encountered IFS through experiencing it in therapy myself. And I had been in traditional talk therapy, more like CBT oriented therapy for many, many years. And I noticed like growth and self-awareness, but there were so many things within me that just felt like they wouldn't budge. And when I first started working with a therapist who introduced me to IFS, my mind was just really blown by how powerful it was and how rapid the change was and like the self-understanding and these parts of myself that were very, very scary to me or that I carried a lot of shame over and what in like more spiritual spaces we might call like our shadow. And being able to access and speak to the shadow and often discover that it's like this tiny, sad little like kid wearing like a monster costume within us that has its own needs and desires, but that we often become very fearful of because of the way that it expresses itself in our lives. And so coming to do that work while I was also going through my Saturn return, this was all kind of at the same time. And then when I started practicing astrology, I had maybe four or five years of doing IFS personally under my belt. And I just saw an advertisement for Embody Lab, and they were hosting a somatic parts work course with Fran Booth, who's a psychologist. And I enrolled and was like, hell yeah, I want to do this. This sounds awesome. And I spent a summer getting certified and then began weaving it into my client work more.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you had done any like formal training or anything with it. Like, I mean, I guess I was going to say not that it matters, but I think it does matter to like an extent when we're talking about like counseling and stuff, having certain counseling skills. But I know that also like education is kind of kept from certain people. So like, I'm kind of open about that stuff, but that's cool. Yeah. I mean, to, you know, find that passion and to then take it to that next step. It's always fun.
Totally. Yeah. It was great. And it's one of those things where there are plenty of resources that you don't have to go through a certification process to be exposed to and a lot of great books out there, but it felt right for me at that moment. And I was at this point where I was like, let's do it. I'm gonna go all in.
So that was around the same time as your Saturn return, or was that a little bit after?
The certification was after. It was in 2022.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, but I had been doing IFS throughout my Saturn return.
Right. Yeah. So you had like the personal experience. It was working for you. And then you were like, I can bring this into my practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was just incredibly in awe over it and was constantly telling people, like to an annoying degree, people would be like, here's this thing going on in my life. I was like, oh, have you tried IFS? And eventually I was like, I need to just chill out and like maybe go figure out how to talk about this with people who are interested.
Yeah. You're like, have you considered that that's the magical part of you?
They're like, all right, I get it. Yeah.
So. Amazing. So how does it fit in with your astrology practice these days? Do you also use it with tarot and like Akashic Records? Is it just something you weave into everything that you do now?
You know, it seems like it. And my first reaction was like, no, not really. But the more I think about it, yeah, it really, because similar to astrology, where once you kind of have the language and that framework, it just tends to seep into the way that you see the world.
Yeah.
It's been similar for me with IFS, and the two systems are so beautiful to use together because astrology is in itself a form of parts work, looking at the planets within us, looking at their roles and their functions. And so when I was going through that course, and actually before the course, I remember telling my therapist, like, I want to study this and I want to like figure out how to weave it together with astrology. And it happens so easily and so naturally. And so I began kind of like taking more of that approach in client work. And when we'd be looking at the chart, if someone brought a difficult pattern to me, I would kind of back up and have them engage with those two parts of themselves and then associate it with the planets and kind of what the planets were desiring and what they might be yearning for, needing, feeling, fearing. And in a way, we ended up unburdening the planets within the chart. And then I also, with my Akashic Records practice, have records readings that are themed according to the planets. And so those are more of like a dialogue with like the archetype, as opposed to looking at the chart and going through it in that more kind of technical way. And so that's been really, really powerful because it weaves together the records, which in themselves are very magical, and like working with, again, the archetype and sort of the energy of the planet and not the whole chart.
Yeah. That sounds really cool. Readings based on like a single planet and talking with that archetype.
It's cool. Yeah.
So deep with that.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah.
It's really beautiful because people will self-select, right? Like they go onto my website and they're like, I want to do the moon reading. And often in the course of the reading, we'll kind of like forget what they came in to talk about, but it's always centered around the archetype and finds its way in and seeps into the work. So I love it.
Interesting. It's cool. Yeah. So let's just talk about an astrology reading then. Like when somebody books with you, that like the IFS stuff is just kind of woven into what you're going to present in a reading.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's not that it comes up for everyone.
Right.
I find that like it's most effective, again, when there's that sort of tension.
Gotcha.
And often there is, right? Like we all kind of have tension. Like
yeah, sure.
To a degree. And often that's what people come in, they're wanting help sort of untangling a knot or like figuring out a tricky pattern or something that they're like, I just can't figure this out. I can't budget. I don't know why I keep making the same choices or ending up in the same place or why I can't seem to move forward. And that's the point where we'll typically like ask those parts of ourselves what's going on. And I'll share what I'm seeing. Like I'll be a little bit more prescriptive and be like, it seems like there's this part of you that really is desiring connection and safety and to feel seen and held. And then there's also a part of you that's like really craving independence and to feel safe and to feel autonomous. And like, I can see how it would be difficult for those two to coexist, but maybe we can find a way to make that happen. And then we'll sort of like explore their needs and ultimately try to create more harmony between those two parts. And usually there's some shared like Venn diagram stuff going on in the center. And so they do have similarities and they do have desires, and it's just about identifying it.
I'm curious, like so in terms of like those tensions that are coming up, my mind immediately goes to like a harder aspect in the chart. Like, so if we're looking at oppositions, squares, maybe sometimes conjunctions, but do you notice that you do more of this work with people that have planets in signs where they find difficulty? So like a Mars in detriment or a Venus in fall, something like that.
You know, interestingly, I haven't noticed that they present with more of those issues because I think that every single planet in every sign has like all of those aspects within it.
Yeah.
I think that there's a higher degree of sort of like the coping strategies being stronger and like more built in with planets in detriment and then like the tough aspects. But what I do really see, to your point, is like with a square or with an opposition between planets, that tension is going to be exacerbated and more intense and often needs more relieving because there's this like dissonance that's going on. Whereas if it's like a conjunction between two planets, they might sort of be like on top of each other and like enmeshed in a way. And so that's often like where we really over-identify with a certain part of ourselves and have trouble backing away and seeing like, oh, this isn't the whole of me.
That makes sense. Yeah. Especially with that visual of the planets being on top of each other. And like, there's that sight, but it's so fixed, and not fixed as in like the modality, but like so intense just to that one thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And people with stelliums too. Like that's.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That focus energy for sure.
Because there's so much of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we can look at my chart, your chart. We can go through some examples. But I'm wondering if like off the top of your head, is there a planet that you often see brings a lot of tension, or like a combination of planets or a sign? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know like all planets, all signs, they're all going to have their own tensions and their own issues. But I'm curious if there's been a placement or a relationship between planets and signs that has come up more often.
Definitely. So the two that come to mind first are the moon and Pluto. Mm-hmm. Those are big hitters for sure. And I think in part because Pluto can bring us into so much shadow.
Yeah.
So that's often like the scariest suppressed material for people. And then the moon tends to be like the most tender. And so we've had these two things that are scary for a lot of people to engage with, is like the shadowy parts and then also the like very tender, vulnerable parts within us.
Right.
And I'll often see folks who have Scorpio placements because of the like depth work that Scorpio people are often willing to do. And so they're, you know, Scorpio,
come on my show and come for Scorpios.
No, I'm saying this in the best possible way. Yes, yeah. Like that Scorpio people will come in and be willing to explore the scariest parts. Right.
Yeah.
And so they, like, I get tons of Scorpio moon clients because.
Oh, interesting.
They come in and they're just like, let's go. Right. And it's awesome. It's like my favorite people to work with. And so I think that like there's a, like perhaps someone with more of like an airy moon isn't necessarily going to want to go straight to that type of material in the same way. And they won't present as much. So I think it's like a statistical problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people with like Pluto moon squares, which I have myself, people with like Mercury and Sun Pluto stuff going on are often the ones who are coming in and are like, I have this thing. I don't know what to do. We gotta like do some scuba diving here into my psyche and figure it out.
Kind of off topic question. What sign is your Mercury in?
Taurus.
Really? Okay. I love it. But I mean, it's got that Venusian edge, I guess. It's just, I mean, you mentioned you're a poet, but also just like your choice of words is so like lovely and inspiring and like there's so much depth to it. Mercury's in Libra and like does not function the same way, but.
I think it's my Mercury-Pluto opposition that is sounding the alarms maybe.
Could be, yeah. You just have such a lovely way of putting things, like just a way with words, I guess, yeah.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
So we can dive into my chart if you'd like. I do have one more question, though. When you were kind of thinking, like, I really want to mix these two practices, like they feel like such a good fit for each other, was there something in your chart that, like, kind of made that all click for you, or somebody else's chart, or like was there a thing that made you see just how like magical of a fit these things could be?
Yes. And I'm so glad you asked this because I actually totally forgot about this experience. But I was in an IFS session with my therapist and just out of nowhere, I was like, this is my Leo moon. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, this is my like 12th house Taurus stuff. And she wasn't an astrologer. So she was just like, okay. but it was like these gears started turning in my brain and like, this is my Venus in Pisces. And I just like heard these parts of myself coming alive as I was talking.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh my God, one of those aha moments that you have where like something synthesizes in your brain. And from that point forward, I just couldn't unsee it. And every time I was doing my own parts work, just like on my own time, I started seeing those mappings and started creating like visuals to kind of capture it and then doing like tarot spreads about it. And it just felt like this really gorgeous, intuitive process that brought all these different branches into like one cute little place.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I'm laughing along because I've been in therapy before and like we'll be talking about a certain situation and I'll pause and I'll start laughing because I'll realize like, oh, that transit that's happening right now. Like,
yes.
Me like bringing that to life. It's so fascinating.
Yes, for sure. It's beautiful. It's a whole other language.
I know. Yeah. Ugh, love it. Okay, yeah. So do you want me to bring my chart back up or do you want to just chat about it?
We can just chat about it if you want. Do you feel comfortable introducing us to your parts, to your
partner? Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm a Scorpio rising, Scorpio sun, Pluto in the first house. Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the Mars and Libra stuff?
Yeah, like sure.
And Aries stuff. Okay.
Yeah. That's such a standout part of my chart for me, like with Mars being the ruler of my ascendant, but in the 12th house and like in detriment. And it's the Mars-Jupiter opposition is the only – it's the tightest aspect in my chart as well. And, you know, if we're talking about – sect, it's my benefic of sect and my malefic out of sect. So it's like, it's so fucking charged, that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you think about it, do you get any sort of like visceral feeling in your body?
Ooh, I definitely feel the heat of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I feel that tension, and I wonder if it's like I think it's an aspect I'm going to be exploring my entire life and trying to fully understand all the ways that it plays out and all of the things that I guess I could be using it for in a way, or like, you know, growing from, I guess. But yeah, I feel the heat of it, but also like the confusion.
Yeah. Does the confusion feel – have like a sensation to it, or how does it manifest for you?
In this moment, I think I'm just feeling that heat from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really the sensation that's coming through. There's definitely something like – there's like definitely something in the throat area – but like I definitely feel it in my belly as well. Yeah, it's the heat.
Does the throat feel constricted or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like there's something there, but it's not quite budging, like that stuck feeling. Yes.
But it's like I also don't really know what is there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's like the confusion as well.
When you connect with those parts, do you feel a little bit immobilized, or does it feel like you can access them and kind of feel into them and work with them?
I think maybe both, and like at different times I'll feel immobilized but also energized, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the Mars in Libra in the 12th and how, you know, you mentioned before we were recording that there's the desire for like assertiveness, and I won't put words in your mouth, but you said desire for assertiveness, but then also there was the opposite desire to sort of like go with the flow. Is that right?
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe that wasn't exactly the right wording either, but it was like, I don't know if go with the flow is exactly what I meant. I guess it's more of like, I think this is maybe sort of off in another direction. But I think something I'm constantly dealing with is like, where do you draw the line between being assertive and like, or not maybe draw the line, but like, I want to be assertive, but I don't want to be a bitch. Mm-hmm. And also, I really respect anger and I think it can teach us something, but also I grew up around a lot of angry people and I don't want to mm-hmm. be an angry person. So I guess maybe, yeah, go with the flow, but not in like that nice go with the flow way. Like it's actually probably very hurtful for myself, like, or not, maybe not hurtful, but not helpful. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Okay. Yeah. It seems like the part of you with your Mars in Libra that desires the assertiveness can get stalled by the fear of like being something that was harmful to you.
Yes.
And so there's this like built-in, like, I need to assert myself in order to take care of myself, but I'm also afraid that that's hurting myself if I assert myself. Does that resonate?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I get why it would feel kind of like at times like you're immobilized if that's not getting booing support or like wind behind your sails or people who are affirmative and sort of make space for your anger to exist in safe ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that Mars in Libra, something that could be really powerful is going to that fear and just asking it questions. Like, what do you think would happen if I asserted myself? Or like, what is the story that goes along with this?
Those are good questions.
You don't have to answer them. But asking those sorts of questions can kind of make space for sometimes answers that make perfect sense. And sometimes they're really kind of shocking, and it can help because you're just listening to a part often for the very first time.
Yeah.
And I would imagine part of the Mars in Libra pain is also being unheard, especially in your anger.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And yeah, so that can be beautiful.
There's this part of me that, well, I guess it's maybe this Mars in Libra that will oft like is always like looking for that balance and that fairness and that compromise and like is always thinking about like, well, if I did this, then this person could do this and that's how we both show up. But then sometimes I'll be doing my thing and the other person doesn't realize their thing because there was no conversation about it. It's going on in my head. It's not necessarily a shared understanding. But then I get so pissed off because I'm like, well, why aren't you showing up and doing the fair thing? Like, this should be a thing that we do, you know?
Yeah. And I would imagine like part of that probably comes from the fact that you had to be observing other people and predicting their actions and having that sort of attunement to people.
Yeah.
And so like that's, it's also really intelligent. Like there's an inherent intelligence within that part that learned to operate in a way that kept you safe and that kept you in connection. And so like sometimes affirming that too, and even expressing gratitude is a big part. Like, thank you.
That's nice. Yeah.
Thank you for keeping me safe.
Right.
And sometimes when we feel that recognition and gratitude, it can really like lift a weight off of our shoulders because then there's less shame built into it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That feels right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ooh, so, I love this.
It's fun to explore.
Yeah. There's so much there. Before we recorded, you said like it's such a magical thing and I'm like feeling that magic. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something really special about getting to know ourselves and just asking questions.
So validating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes perfect sense now to pair these two things. Like just even thinking about, because I know that maybe a lot of astrologers can get not caught up, but once you understand the language and you look at a chart, it's kind of like the whole thing speaks to you in a way. And it's difficult to just look at that one thing because it's like, yes, but it's also aspecting this other planet and it's in this house. So that means like there's so many different elements, but I think there's so much richness in just looking at that single placement and like, I don't know. Yeah. Scorpio shit, diving so deep into that one thing and like really understanding it and that being so validating. Like, I love what you say about acknowledging that part, thanking it. Like, it is doing something for you, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that feels really beautiful.
It's really powerful because I think often we'll go to these maybe different extremes of like, affirming the positive, quote, positive expressions of the planet, or like focusing so deeply on the shadow expression of it without acknowledging that like both can have maladaptive tendencies and like both can have beautiful qualities. And so I think it adds a lot of nuance. And to your earlier point about planets in detriment, I've seen that be especially potent for folks with both planets in detriment and planets in, and exalted planets.
Right.
Because often we can get into binary thinking around their expressions and not kind of appreciate the nuance that exists within both. And so it can be really powerful for people.
That's a great point. It's interesting that I only brought up the detriment placements before because I'm very much about like I'm hardcore stan for Mars and Saturn. Like, I love the malefic so much. And I'm more the person that's like, that's a lot of Venus and Jupiter. Like, let's be careful with that. Like, really go overboard. Like, I don't know. Like, I sometimes hear the really nice interpretations of their interactions and of those planets. And I think it's totally valid, but I'm also like, but I'm probably going to like eat too much chocolate or something and then like feel like shit. And I mean, very basic example, but
And with, you know, the prevalence of more like pop astrology where it's like Jupiter, Venus, and then like fear around like the outer planets and the malefics. It's I think it's really valuable conversation to have. Just the fact that it's not so simple.
No, it's really not. Yeah. There's so many different factors and like pieces and
And like, I have an exalted Venus in Pisces. And so that's like on the flip side, like that's also been the planet in my chart that's probably brought me some of the most grief in my life. And so I always had trouble identifying with like what exaltation meant when I was getting to know my chart. And I get it now and I, you know, I understand, but having that language and that nuance really helped me to unpack a lot of that.
I think one of the most helpful things that I've had a teacher say to me is that, you know, let's take Venus in Pisces, exalted, for example. It's really good for Venus. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
Yeah. Did you want to talk more about Venus and Pisces and how it kind of relates to the IFS stuff?
Yeah, totally. So for context, Venus and Pisces in the 11th house, I'm a Taurus rising and I have a Taurus sun and Mercury. And so it's ruling my Taurus placements and my ascendant. And it forms a cute little sextile to my Saturn in Cap and a sextile to my ascendant in Taurus. And it doesn't have any particularly challenging aspects. And so if you were to look at my chart, you might hone in on like my Scorpio descendant and my like Pluto stuff as a source of challenges in relationships.
Yeah.
But, and that all makes sense for sure. But I found that that was actually like the easier material for me to engage with as opposed to like the Venus and Pisces shadow.
Interesting.
Because part of it, similar to with your Mars in Libra, Venus in Pisces can be so adaptive that it completely loses itself in the process.
That makes sense.
And can be very self-sacrificial, but also very swept up in idealism and become like a chameleon that then becomes resentful and falls into like a state of martyrdom or like perpetual victimhood, especially in connections.
Yeah.
And so those were all things that throughout my life, I was like in one abusive relationship after the other and in like really toxic dynamics for like most of my life. And when I started studying astrology, I got to know Pluto and that helped a lot, but it really came back to Venus. And I had to start working with Venus and understanding that like within this part of me that on the surface just felt very like loving. And I was like, I love everyone. I can find something to love about everyone. Like, and it had like a sort of like manic pixie dream girl vibe to it that I like.
God, that feels so Venus and Pisces. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's completely. Like, what a great explanation. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Like I would, and it's so funny because many of the actresses that have portrayed like that particular archetype have natal Venus and Pisces, like Drew Barrymore. I'm totally spacing, whatever. It doesn't matter, but it's common. And there's a sort of projected quality where like you're everything to everyone, but no one truly knows you kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And like everyone might have like fantasies that are projected upon you, but then you're seen more as like an object as opposed to a human, which there are other things that go into that.
Yeah.
But that was a struggle for me for a long time. And that I felt like, I just always felt used. I always felt like very depleted in connections. And through parts work and coming to know that Venus, I was like, this part of me just wants to like pour glitter over people's pain and to be able to like come in and like wave a little fairy wand and like change things, because that was the part of me as a child that would like dissociate into fantasy novels to like get through.
Yeah.
And so I had that very fantastical, imaginative, like potent, playful part of me, but I was also constantly self-abandoning. And constantly sort of like softening myself when I'm also like a fixed bitch. Like, and so it baffled me because I was like, I'm a fucking Leo moon with like Taurus placements opposite
right.
Pluto. Yeah. Like I can also be a fucking hard ass.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so confusing to have this part of me that was like, but I'll just like dissolve into a puddle and you can step all over me and I'll like kiss your shoes as you do. And it was just like, what? And so going into conversation with that part that like so deeply believed that I was like undeserving of love unless I was like completely giving all of myself.
Yeah.
And then the ways that that not only harmed me, but also harmed people I was in relationship with.
Sure.
Because it wasn't fair to them. And they were also getting like this chameleon that would adapt to meet them wherever they were at. So it was very self-perpetuating. And getting to know that fear and that inherent, like, no one truly loves me idea, or like, I'll never be loved or whatever, was really kind of the key that unlocked a lot for me. And then I actually began to love myself, and like that helped.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing all of that. That's wow.
Yeah.
It was I don't want to say cool to hear you, but it was cool to hear you talk about it in that way. I can see the Venus in Pisces in all of that description. Like, it's so on point. And I think it's like I just said, it sounds excellent for Venus. Like, that's what Venus wants, is to make that connection no matter what, and to bring that harmony, and to have all the glitter and potentially like glittery seashells, I guess, in Pisces.
Yes.
And
like,
you sounds know, great, and, to be honest. And dissolve in that way for sure. But like for you, yeah, not so fucking fun. So yeah. I can totally imagine that you coming to astrology and learning this like language around exaltation, and you're like, not really.
Totally. And meeting other Venus and Pisces who had like the most shit luck in relationships that I'd ever seen, I was like,
damn,
I don't know, y'all. Did they get it wrong? And it like really was so powerful to start unpacking that. And my evolutionary astrology and teacher, instructor, guide, Amanda Moreno, has Venus and Pisces at the exact same degree as me.
And so
getting to like connect with her and learn from her was super, super powerful. And Neptune is now like on our Venus, so we're going through a shared evolution, and it's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that. It was really, really beautiful and eye-opening.
Yeah. Happy to.
I'm curious, how did you, or how would you recommend people start having that conversation, like with that particular planet, let's say? So if it was you with the Venus in Pisces, do you remember how you started that dialogue? Or like for a Mars in Libra, how you would start that dialogue? Would it be the same? I know you said ask questions of that fear of being assertive, that kind of thing, but yeah, where would people start? I mean, aside from a session with you, because that would be
first. Yeah, that's cool. I think it can be powerful and accessible for people to start outside of astrology and to just kind of bring into focus a challenging pattern or a challenging polar feeling within them. And that might look like there's one part of me that really wants this, and there's another part of me that really wants that. And they seem like they're in a tug of war. And then instead of getting kind of overwhelmed by that tug of war and just kind of avoiding it, or like jumping straight into the fire and siding with this part or siding with that part, it can be really beautiful to just say like, so there's a part of me that really wants connection, and I'm going to spend some time with this part. I'll come back to the part over here that really wants independence. And like, I promise I'll get to you.
Right.
And you'll have your time too. And facilitating it similarly to how you would facilitate like a conflict between two people.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
Sometimes it helps to give them names and to even like explore who they are and what their identity is. And I just find that inevitably that brings us into contact with a planet. Like,
right.
It's just how it goes. And so if you're an astrology human, you might find in the course of that conversation that you come to see who you're talking to. And maybe it's Mars, maybe it's Venus, maybe it's the moon, maybe it's an outer planet. And it's helpful, I think, to start with just the self-attunement, maybe the reverse for other people, but yeah.
Sure. Maybe depending on like your level of understanding of any of these practices could be the pathway in, but that makes sense. Yeah. Actually just identifying without any other languages on top of it, what's actually going on within you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the most, like you said, accessible.
Yeah. Definitely. Because you don't have to involve astrology in it, but it sure is cool too.
But it's pretty cool.
Of course, we're going to.
Yeah. But yes, I think first step would be booking a session with Jana DeDoy, of course.
I mean, I would love that. Yeah. Especially if you have a Scorpio moon, come my way. Let's go.
All right. You heard that, Scorpio moons. Let's go. Well, this has been so amazing. I feel like I've learned so much. This was such a fun chat. Thank you.
Thank you. You're such a great host. It's so easy to talk when you're the one who's driving. Yeah.
Amazing. That's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Aside from sessions with you that could cover stuff like IFS and parts work, what else do you have going on, or do you have stuff that's upcoming that you really want to promote and put out there?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that's ongoing for me besides like one-to-one client work is I do offer kind of group services via Patreon. And so that's a low-cost way to work with me on the reg and different tiers and stuff that are accessible there. I'll periodically do like flash tarot readings, flash Akashic readings. And so those are all advertised on social and via my newsletter. And I might be reintroducing soon my Akashic astrology reading, where we explore the chart through the lens of the Akashic records. And it's a much more intuitive, kind of flowy experience that combines divination and astrology. So I'm excited about that.
Cool. I think in the notes, I was like, we could also talk about Akashic records, but maybe we'll save it for another chat, because I would love to learn. And I think if you're going to reintroduce this reading, then we could get together and chat about it. Do you ever combine tarot with your astrology?
I do. Actually, almost every time. I'll typically do a 3-card spread for people when I do a natal chart reading to kind of just like hook into the themes. And then I also have like actual tarot add-ons for each of my appointments. So if people want to get like a 1 or 2 question add-on, they can do that.
Gotcha. This might bring us down a whole other road that we might not have time for. But really quickly, what are your feelings on the connections between tarot and astrology in terms of like this card is connected to this planet or to this decan? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you have a good answer for that, but
you know, when I was first learning each system independently, a lot of it made no sense to me and the associations were very baffling. Okay. But the more I've deepened into my tarot practice over the years, the more I find it to be really expansive and has helped me actually understand both the like planetary and zodiac sign archetypes and the tarot cards in a bigger way.
Yeah.
Like the core example I think of is like Aquarius and the star.
Yeah. That's a good one.
And at first it made no sense to me. And now I'm like, of course, of course. So yeah, it's cool. It evolves. How do you feel about it?
I kind of go back and forth. There's some times where I'm like, nah, throw it all out. It needs to be redone, or like, let's just keep them separate. And then there's sometimes where I'm like, holy shit, that connects like so well. Yeah. And I agree. I think there's been times where I don't know if I've necessarily seen it where the tarot card will help me understand the astrology better, but I've definitely seen it where the astrology of it, like knowing the astrology side to it, has helped me dig deeper into a tarot card. Mm-hmm. That's definitely been, I guess, kind of a one-way learning thing for me. But yeah, mostly I go back and forth, and some days it's hot and some days it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. It's ever-changing.
Yeah, which is fine. Yeah. It can't be perfect. They're not a one-for-one system, so whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like the minors in particular, the pips, it's like, really? Is that like that's a Virgo card? Okay, sure. Okay. Yeah. So.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun. Thank you for sharing your experiences, for helping me dive deeper into my Marsy stuff. This was great.
This was so great. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate you.
Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed that chat. Thank you again to Jana for joining me. It was such a delight to be in conversation with you. Please do check out the show notes for ways to work with or hear more from Jana. You can always check out my offerings as well. All the links are there ready for your little fingertips, your sweet little fingertips. I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here and listen. And if you have a friend or a coworker or somebody in your life that you think would enjoy this episode or would enjoy the show overall, please do spread the word. Send them a link to this episode. Sharing is caring, my dearest cosmic pals. All right, I'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, I'll catch you in the cosmos.